Kent Online News.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.
Nicola Everett.
It's Tuesday, the 13th of August, coming up. Daughter still hopes to solve mystery of mum's disappearance more than 20 years on.
She said she was having tea with some little old ladies the last time I spoke to her on the phone, and she was in Tunbridge Wells and having a lovely time exploring, is what she said to me.
Could eating less meat help tackle climate change?
What we're told and what we hear is that we as individuals need to decide to eat less meat. And I think that's highly unfair on us as individuals. We don't need individual change, we need system change.
The Kent site's making it onto a new Lonely Planet guide.
I think once again, the more popular Whitstable keeps getting year on year, week on week almost, we've got to have a bigger push for more sustainable transport, encourage people to use public transport and things like that.
Kent Online News.
Well, our top story today is all about the ongoing mystery of a mum's disappearance more than 20 years ago. Marion Barter left her family in Australia in 1997, telling them she was going on holiday to England for a year. She's known to have visited Tunbridge and stay in Tunbridge Wells. But after that, she vanished. Her daughter, Sally Layden, has been speaking to us on Skype about their ongoing quest to find out what happened.
So my mum went on a year-long holiday to the UK in 1997, and the first contact we had with her was a letter that was stamped at Kent in the UK. It was quite a lengthy letter. It had about 9 pages to it from the hotel that she had stayed in Tokyo. So that kind of was the first point of call that we had. She told us that she was in Tunbridge Wells and, preceding postcards from her sort of sent us through Alfriston and down to Brighton. I actually contacted Kent Police quite early on. Obviously, she's been missing for 20 years and it's been quite a lengthy journey. Her passport did come back into Australia under a different name on the 2nd of August in 1997. So for us, we were 100% sure if it was her using her passport or if somebody else had used her passport. That happened in 1997, and I contacted Kent Police to see if we could do some sort of report over there, but I was told that that had to come through, that unfortunately had to come through Queensland and New South Wales Police here in Australia. And unfortunately they weren't happy to do much with Mum's case at the time, so it became a bit of a problem for me in trying to gain access and information to that area in the UK until recently when we flew over there and retraced Mum's steps. You know, I guess if we could put it out there to that area, even she stayed in a hotel there. She said she was having tea with some little old ladies the last time I spoke to her on the phone, and she was in Tunbridge Wells and having a lovely time exploring, is what she said to me. So I firmly believe that there may be people out there that know who she was or bumped into her or had a chat with her. She did say in her letter to me that she was aghast at how many people knew that she was Australian based on her accent. And I think she sort of tongue-in-cheek said, "Do I really sound that bad?" Because she always felt that she liked to speak quite well and proper. People were recognising that she was an Aussie from her accent. So I guess someone might remember something, you know. That was the last known place that I'd ever spoken to her, and I was the last person to speak to her that I'm aware of, known to me. So, yeah, if anybody in the UK or in Tunbridge Wells could help me, even Alfriston, she went down to, there was a little shop there called Sally's Craft back in the day, and she sent me a postcard. The lady in the shop there when we visited said we had confirmation that she had put a sticker on the back of the card saying Sally's Craft, and the lady said she would have had to specifically ask for that because she only put them on gift wrapping when she was doing gift wrapping. So the fact that she went to the trouble of asking for that sticker to be put on the back that said Sally's Craft, and obviously my name's Sally, so it was quite a nice point that she was thinking of me, and you know, it obviously was a nice moment for her to go, "I should get a postcard from here for Sally." And then we went down to Brighton as well. So she definitely travelled a fair way down the coast. I think the last postcard was sent from Hastings. So definitely that whole coastal region, if anyone had any information or if anyone remembered her, that would definitely be the locations that we'd be looking at around in that Kent region.
Kent Online reports.
An investigation's due to get underway after a fire broke out at a derelict hospital building in Folkestone. At its height, around 40 firefighters were tackling the flames at the Royal Victoria on Radnor Park Road last night. You can see pictures from the scene at kentonline.co.uk. A woman hurt in a crash in Broadstairs has died from her injuries. The 87-year-old was in one of three cars involved in the collision on Northwood Road on Saturday. A man arrested over what happened has been released while police investigate. The number of people out of work in Kent has gone up again. Last month, nearly 30,000 were claiming Job Seekers Allowance or Universal Credit, 825 more than in June. Across the country, there are now 1.33 million people without a job. On to climate change now, a topic that's been high on the agenda recently, with protests bringing parts of the capital to a standstill. Well, here, 9 out of the 13 local councils in Kent have now declared a climate emergency and bid to reduce carbon emissions. Ashford and Dover have rejected the idea, while Dartford and Sevenoaks are yet to decide. The KM Community Podcast has been speaking to Dr. Charlie Gardner, a professor at the University of Kent. He's been chatting to Ollie about whether all of us eating less meat will also help tackle the problem.
Meat production, animal agriculture, and particularly industrial meat production is a big contributor to climate change for a couple of reasons. One is that ruminants like cattle produce methane, and methane is a much, much more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. But the main reason is that eating meat is a vastly inefficient way of producing food. So because of the inefficiencies of an animal converting the food it eats into flesh. So generally, the figure given is of an order of magnitude. So there's a 10 times reduction in energy between the food that a cow eats and the energy it will generate when it's eaten. So what that means is lands that would be the land required to produce enough meat for one person would have been able to produce enough plant food for 10 people. So it's hugely inefficient. Having said that, I'm slightly concerned with the way that this information is used and presented. Because when we hear that we as a society need to eat less meat, what we're told and what we hear is that we as individuals need to decide to eat less meat. And I think that's highly unfair on us as individuals. We don't need individual change, we need system change. And it's really unfair on us to be told on the one hand you need to eat less meat, but on the other hand to go shopping and be presented with huge amounts of cheap meat, and to walk the streets and be bombarded with advertisements for burgers.
Yeah, but is the alternative feasible? Because in my mind, the alternative, if you're not going to suggest that people need to make their own decisions on whether they do or don't eat meat, you are going to be either restricting meat purchasing in supermarkets or restricting the advertising of meat. And then you've got that. Some people might say then that you've got a Big Brother mentality happening where you're stopping people from eating the things that they want to eat.
Well, it's a question of human survival. Local councils and governments around the country have declared a state of climate emergency. And we need to think about that word emergency. It is an emergency. And in an emergency, you change your normal behaviour. And of course, it's not going to be all pleasant, but it needn't be horrific either if we start making changes now. But I think we need to acknowledge that we cannot carry on as normal. With regards to meat, I think the most important thing is to look at the economics of it and change the economics so that the huge costs of producing meat are factored into the price. We eat a lot of meat now because it is artificially cheap. It's hugely subsidized, and there are what economists call externalities. So the costs of meat production are not factored into it. Producing meat emits a hell of a lot of carbon, and that carbon, it's taking away the futures of our children and grandchildren. So that's a huge social cost that everyone is paying for meat production. If there were taxes on emitting carbon, or a proper price on carbon that reflects the damage it causes to society, then that would be reflected in the price of meat, and it would become more expensive. We would treat it as a special thing, as we always have done. And don't forget our habit of eating meat every day and sometimes multiple times a day is a very new thing. Mm-hmm. My parents grew up having meat as a special treat, perhaps once a week. And that's how most of the world in non-industrialized countries still lives. And yeah, I'm not saying we need to cease eating all meat immediately, but we need to think about how we produce it, and we need to go back to having it as a special thing rather than something we take for granted eating every meal.
Kent Online reports.
Plans to expand a traveller's site in Kent have been given the go-ahead despite some councillors saying they felt forced into the decision. The land on Roman Villa Road in Darrenth Hill will now be able to have 11 pitches instead of the current 6 to help tackle a shortage of available space in the area. But some of the planning committee criticised the government's gypsy and traveller policy. The people who've been given permission to open a giant adventure centre at Bluewater have insisted it won't become an amusement park. A zipwire, gravity swing, Skytrek obstacle course and rock climbing will open at the shopping centre after plans from Hang Loose Adventure were given the go-ahead. Some people living nearby had raised concerns about noise and traffic. Meantime, a new entertainment centre's opened at the site of an £850,000 leisure complex in Ashford. There'll be things like gigs, food markets and vintage clothes sales at the Coachworks near the International Station, but it'll only be there for 5 years when it's turned into part of the site's commercial quarter. More than a dozen Kent places and events have been ranked today among the top 500 things for travellers to do. 14 sites, including Margate's Shell Grotto and Canterbury Cathedral, have made it into Lonely Planet's Ultimate United Kingdom Travel List Guide. A trip to the Oyster Festival in Whitstable makes it as one of the best experiences. Neil Baker is a local councillor in the town.
Well, as always, it's absolutely great for Whitstable to get all the recognition it does. It seems increasingly common, which should never be sniffed at. We're very lucky. We have a lot of people who put in a lot of good work for the town. Obviously, in this instance, we've got those who organised the Oyster Festival. But I think we should also remember the traders who, of course, put in so much year-round to promote the town, and also the residents who, while they do enjoy the festival and the activities, they do sometimes have to put up with a little bit more traffic and crowds of people on the streets than they would normally.
And also, are you familiar with Lonely Planet guides yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, it is a prestigious publication to get into, which is great. To get recognition at that level of something that people do read and do take into consideration when they choose to visit different places.
And so do you think, because it's such a reputable publication, do you think that will have a significant impact? Obviously tourism's already pretty good in Whitstable. Do you think it could make it even better?
Well, it can't do it any bad, of course, but I do of course worry sometimes that Whitstable's almost at saturation points in the key season, so especially as we have had this year lots of confusion about the roadworks coming down from the M2 and everything. So I think once again the more popular Whitstable keeps getting year on year, week on week almost, we've got to have a bigger push for more sustainable transport, encourage people to use public transport and things like that, because, going back to the old days of people all piling in their cars and coming down, it just really isn't something we need going forward, because we're running out of space almost. There's only so many people you can take in a town, and there's only so many people who can shop in the shops and eat in the cafes at the same time, so yeah.
In terms of the Oyster Festival itself, what do you think makes it stand out so much? That's been sort of ranked so highly in the guide?
Well, I think it's because, the Oyster Festival's been around in many different guises now for a good few years. It's changed, it's evolved, as these things do. but it's become something that happens at a, you know, broadly similar time every year. It's great that it happens the first weekend after the schools break up. I think that's a huge boost because it's before people disappear on holiday and things. And of course, Whitstable and oysters is something that's gone back since Roman times, thousands of years. And, you know, despite all the modern things that you get these days, there is still that proper tradition to it, dating back so far. And I think people like that. And I think especially when people want more and more to learn more about the history and heritage of their own country rather than, you know, always flying around the world to different places, they like to see what's actually just down the road for them or even on their own doorstep and learn about it that way.
Kent Online Sport.
Adam Peaty's been at a swimming pool in Medway today to try and inspire the next generation of champions. The Olympic gold medalist and breaststroke world record holder has held a race clinic at Strood Sports Centre. He was joined by fellow Olympian Tim Shuttleworth, youth Commonwealth champion Edward Baxter and strength and conditioning coach Rob Norman. And Adam spoke to Kent Online from the event.
So the second day, we're doing 5 days, 100 kids a day across the country, and we're just trying to inspire as many people as we can. And obviously, you know, the staple is on that, they're going to have fun. That's almost a given with these kind of things. We are serious when we get to work, but around the edges, the kids should be smiling, they are smiling, and they're learning. And it's almost engaging the kids to, you know, think very differently about sport. You know, for me, when I was growing up, I was way too serious about it. At their age, just need to carry it through and then, you know, start to absolutely nail it when they're older.
The key to this is you're here, hands on deck, in the pool with them, teaching them, hands on, aren't you?
Yeah. So yeah, I've been in here for about 4 hours now, in about 35 degrees, which is good, really, because I'm always in the pool instead of out of it, so I've got a new appreciation for my coach. But yeah, I mean, you've got to acclimatise, but yeah, the kids are almost so nervous to kind of see you, that you've got to kind of break the ice with them, show them, you know, I am a normal person, I was just like them. And you know, I just worked extremely hard to get to where I am.
That's a massive thing for you. As a youngster, you didn't really take up swimming full-time till you were about, what, 17, 18?
No. So yeah, really, yeah, full-time, about 16, 17. Yeah.
So it's almost like never too late for you to get into that. And that's, I suppose, the message to get into. If they love it that much, it's never too late. And they could be challenging your records one day.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was their age, I was 88th just in the East Midlands alone. So 88th in the East Midlands, not even the whole country, I was probably like 400 or 500th life. Yeah, it's an absolutely abysmal kind of place to be at that age. But you know, I just showed you that it doesn't if you matter if you're first or you're 500th or 1,000th place. If you apply yourself and kind of listen to the people around you, use the people around you to perform, you know, who knows what can happen.
You mentioned who knows what can happen. What are some of the secrets they're going to learn from you today? It's mostly about the breaststroke, but what will they be learning exactly today?
So we're doing a lot of visualisation, so using the mind for good, and obviously it's kind of closing your eyes, imagining your Olympic Games and kind of preparing themselves for, you know, the next few years of, you know, nationals and British Championships and stuff like that, because they are very nerve-wracking for the first time you go. So it's almost trying to overcome that and visualise that before you even get there, which, you know, really helps me during the Olympic Games.
There's a mental strength to swimming as well. You do have to be really calm and calm your breathing as well. Can you explain that?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I mean, on the breaststroke, we only get to breathe once every stroke. But on a really, you know, swimming is about relaxation. It's kind of, obviously you're really, really tired, your arms are, you know, killing, your legs are killing, your lungs are burning. But in that, you've got to kind of be an equilibrium that you know what you're doing. There's a calm voice in your head saying, look, take this stroke faster, take this first stroke slower, or attack it a little bit more. So yeah, you've got to have that kind of calm voice in your head, really.
Would it, last sort of question for me, would it be nice for you at one of your Adam Peaty race clinics for someone here from Strood to be challenging your records one day, breaking
them? Oh yeah,
one
minute. I think I've seen a few applicants for that spot. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to go back to a British person, you know. I wouldn't be British if I wasn't saying that. So yeah, it'd be great to obviously continue that legacy until when I want to retire and get, you know, one of these kids here. Imagine, you know, if they came on one of my clinics and then the next world champion or next Olympic champion, that would be, you know, really something special.
Even if they don't beat your record.
Yeah.
That's it for today. But for more news throughout the day and overnight, don't forget you can head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.